Well, hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. The New York legislature has passed a $140 billion with a B election year budget that expands pre-kindergarten statewide and provides tax relief to homeowners and corporations. The legislature passed it last night. The governor signed it this morning, making it the fourth consecutive on-time budget. The budget contains almost $138 billion for the coming year, with an additional $5 billion in one-time federal aid for Superstorm Sandy rebuilding and the rollout of the Affordable Care Act for uninsured New Yorkers. We're here with Blair Horner, my friend and a guy I really admire, legislative director of the New York Public Interest Research Group. We're going to talk about this budget, what's good, what's bad, and, as they call it, the big ugly, what's ugly. What do you think of this year's budget? Hey, you could be living in Vermont or Massachusetts and look at what's going on here and say, how do they do that over there? Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, which is wmc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can do it the way I would do it if I were you. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. So, my friends, it's a very interesting program. We got the great Blair Horner here. Blair, you've been at this for a long time. You've been legislative director of the NYPIRG, New York Public Interest Group, for over 20 years, yes?
Yes, I started as the legislative director in 1987, and I was first started as a registered lobbyist for NYPIRG in 1984.
Wow.
So this is my 30th year dealing with the legislature.
Well, that's a long time.
I think it's some sort of dog years thing should be sort of counted as this, don't you think?
You can imagine how I feel. So Blair, let's get to some of the most interesting parts of this budget. First of all, there was a big shootout between DiNapoli and Cuomo. Generally, people think Cuomo won.
Well, the governor was able to get into the budget a so-called reform of the campaign finance law. And his plan creates a system of public financing for state comptroller alone, no one else.
It's just dumb.
No one else, just the state comptroller. And for the election that's coming up in 7 months. So under the governor's plan, the State Board of Elections, the much maligned State Board of Elections, will have to create out of nowhere a public financing system. They'll have to hire staff, issue regulations, create a system, write checks, all in time for an election that will occur in 7 months.
And we know that this governor doesn't really, he's never really signaled that he's a big friend of Tom DiNapoli, has he?
Well, I haven't seen any signals. If this is one of the signals, one would think that it's not a good one.
Yeah.
But the worst part about it, from our perspective, is when you advance something that everybody's been talking about for decades. I mean, people have been talking about public financing since the 70s. You advance it, you say he did it, and then it's designed to fail.
Yeah, yeah.
All that will do is evaporate what a little support there is.
So here's this governor with at least $32 million in his campaign account. He says he's for fair campaign. That's a joke. He's for
April Fool's.
he's for fair campaign, stuff. And yet he would have to give up, if they adopted any kind of reasonable system, he'd have to give up a lot of that money in order to run, so that Bernie the bartender might run against him or somebody, basically getting paid for a dollar for, they get $6 for every dollar in New York City. Under this thing. So there are those of us, I'm one of them, hello, that say he never wanted this thing, but he wanted to appear to want it. So he saddled DiNapoli, who has always been his political, nemesis, or he's always picked on DiNapoli, we don't know why, and who's done a terrific job as comptroller. And he say, okay, you go do it, but just for this one election. Not after that, because this is going to be an experiment.
That's right. It's a pilot program, is the way the governor describes it. And if this is a pilot, then this is a plane that will crash. There's no way.
I like that.
There's no way that you can actually come up with a brand new system of public financing and run it for an election that's going to occur in 7 months everyone who thinks about it for 2 seconds knows that that's not going to work.
So what does DiNapoli do? He steps aside and says, I'll forego this one. I don't have to be in the thing. I don't have to take the money. I'm not going to do
it. Well, if he was asking me, I'd say, well, just see what happens. Give it a little time to breathe. The groups, the Brennan Centers, Common Cause, the Women Voters, NYPIRG, all the reform type groups have said that the comptroller should opt out of this awful system because to participate in it is not fair to him, frankly, even if he believes in public financing for comptroller. And I think you can make a good policy argument for why you would want to have public finance for comptroller. To do it at the last minute and to sort of slap it together with no testing, no regulations, no thought, it's just going to fail. And then you're going to waste tax dollars. Why would you want to be party to that? That being said, there may be some magical reasoning that appears out of this. He doesn't have to make a decision though until the convention. So he doesn't have to decide now if he's going to opt in or not.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting to talk to Blair Horner right now are excellent. I'm telling you that. I wouldn't tell you if it were a lie, but it happens to be true. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. Blair, budget document itself is humongous. Do we think that the legislators actually read it?
Well, they have the opportunity to read the budget. The way, just so everybody knows, the way it works for any bill is that once it's passed, once the bill's printed, lawmakers have 3 days to read it before they vote on it. Mm-hmm. And so what happened in this case—
It'll ripen like hard fruit.
That's right.
Or fresh fish.
hopefully not ripening like dead fish. These bills were all introduced around midnight on Friday. So lawmakers had Saturday, Sunday, and Monday to find the things that they cared about, to read the whole document if they wished to. So I think that they certainly had the opportunity. This was not the leaders may have cut these deals and lawmakers may not have felt like they could do much about it, but they certainly knew what they were voting on. If they wanted to. They had the opportunity to know what they were voting on.
Okay, so let's go to our old friend Jonathan from Norfolk. Okay, Jonathan, keep it short. People are calling up. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. This is a $140 billion budget, right?
With a B.
And by my reckoning, about 40% of it is related to health care, which I think is the largest component of the budget.
That's
and
right.
The fastest growing. And that is putting pressure on every other item of the budget and also on our taxes in New York, which I think are among the highest in the country in terms of both personal and corporate income taxes and property taxes. So what does this budget do to rein in health care costs?
Well, when he first came into office, created something called the Medicaid Redesign Team, which came up with sort of a package of reforms that would put a global cap on Medicaid spending, and Medicaid is the main driver of healthcare spending in New York State.
Now, let's all remember that Medicaid is that program for people who have less resources, and for those who, in some cases, are old.
Well, that's right. If you are low income, you can qualify for the Medicaid program.
Medicare, on the other hand, is for everybody else.
For everybody over the age of 65.
Yeah, like me.
We're not telling the listeners how old you are.
Thanks to God.
All right. But in terms of Jonathan's question, they capped the growth in Medicaid spending at roughly 4%. And that's pretty much where it's been at. It's been under 4%. And so the plan has been to sort of redesign the state's spending of its healthcare dollars so that there's higher quality for lower cost. The feds also just gave the state a Medicaid waiver worth around $8 billion to invest in the state's healthcare system to help, again, make the system more efficient and better. So in terms of Jonathan's question, the costs are still going up, although they're not supposed to go up really much more than inflation. And there has been in the budget the expenditure of new federal dollars, in addition to the Affordable Care Act dollars, which are supposed to be used to redesign the system so that to sort of bend the cost curve for health care going forward.
Okay. Jonathan, thanks for that call. Appreciate it. We are going to take a very short break, and then we'll be back. Lots of free phones for you. Bob is up next, but after him, open lines, 1-800-348-2551.
Support for WAMC comes from the Tang Teacher Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. 518-580-8080. Bistro 63 at the Monkey Bar, downtown Amherst, offering casual lunches and dinners featuring steak, seafood, cocktails, and wines using local organic products. Banquet facilities and patio dining, bistro63.com. The Montessori School of the Berkshires hosting their annual auction benefit, Havana Nights, Saturday, April 5th at Shakespeare & Company, Lenox, berkshiremontessori.org for tickets and details. And Current Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York, hosting a national symposium on life insurance compliance, November 12th through the 14th at the Gideon Putnam Resort, Saratoga Springs, currentcompliance.com.
And we are back thanks to the great Zachary, our wonderful engineer who is with us. And we're here with Blair Horner, who is answering your questions. Come on now, 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Bob in Albany. Bob, you're on.
Hello. When did we stop pronouncing Tom Napoli's office controller? I mean, I know the spelling comes from the French with the P, but it's always been controller since I was little. But anyway, the controller reported larger than expected sales tax revenues in early March or late February, and about a little before that, I thought that the politicians were lying about the surplus. Last year, during the winter, they said, well, we're going to have $1 billion surplus, and all the reporters said, how can you get that? We're all short of money. And I'm thinking, hold it. And all of a sudden, nobody started talking about that, and that meant tax revenues are huge. We had a great year in Wall Street, and probably the surplus, the money in excess of what they expected is about $4 billion of $140 billion budget. The way I get at that is that they're giving a $1.5 billion real estate tax freebie. They're thinking about a $500 or $600 million corporation tax giveaway. They're also adding $1.1 billion more in education funding. When you start adding up all those numbers, you get over $3 billion. And no one in the press is picking up on the fact that we had much bigger revenues than they were projecting a year ago, and this is what's driving all this. And it might not happen next year, even though...
Bob, we got the premise. The premise is important, and also you understand...
No one's talking about saving that money.
Yeah, no, I got it. We got it. We got the premise, and let Blair answer, but the other factor in all of this is it's an election year. Go ahead, Blair.
That's right. I mean, this is, in many ways, the budget is an election year budget, where, and typically in election years, politicians do not like to deliver bad news. Bad news tends to happen in odd-numbered years, and the worst news usually tends to occur in the first of a four-year gubernatorial term. So, I mean, that all being said, the governor has been tight-fisted in terms of the actual expenditure of money. He argues that the state's spending has not gone up more than 2%, which is roughly the inflation rate over the 3 years he's been governor. And he argues that because of that tight-fisted spending and perhaps the pickup in the economy, as the caller mentioned, the state has the revenues to do the kinds of things that they're proposing. Now, again, as the caller mentioned, it all hinges on, you know, you never know what's going to happen in the future. So you give tax cuts now, and if the economy tanks, you're stuck with a lot lower revenues. And that's why often you see politicians put money in rainy day funds so that they can sort of fill that up.
Or they wait until the election is over, and then they figure out how to put the clamps on.
Well, that can happen, too. I mean, we saw in 2002, for example, Governor Pataki was running for re-election. Then Senate Majority Leader Joe Bruno opined in the press that the state was facing a $10 billion budget deficit, $10 billion with a B, in 2002, 2003. The governor's people all made fun of Joe Bruno, and it turned out that, Joe Bruno was basically right. The state faced a $12 billion deficit. And so in election years, they like to kick the can. They like to talk happy talk because they have to face the voters. You know, there's no indication that I know of that this budget is out of balance. But, you know, they tend to take the most optimistic scenarios.
So let me be honest with you, Blair Horner. It has nothing to do with you. I don't want you to feel bad about this. But not one phone is ringing right now. This is a station that goes to tens of thousands of people who are listening right now. 1-800-348-2551. Does this mean nobody either knows or cares about what's in the state budget?
Or it's a nice day. It's one of the first nice days of the year. Maybe people are outside.
There are still tens of thousands of people listening to this right now. But I ask a serious question. Honestly, Blair.
It's a complicated thing. It's $100 billion, $140
billion. Yeah, but if I talked about medical marijuana right now, every phone would be ringing.
Right.
If
right.
I talked about, you know, premarital sex, every phone would be ringing.
Well, let's talk about something specific in the budget that might get
okay,
people.
What do you know about premarital sex in the budget?
I don't think there was anything in there on that. But if we keep saying the word sex, we might be able to get people's attention.
Phones are already ringing.
That's right.
It's amazing.
There's something in the budget that's actually very good, and it's not, as, in a sense, a real budget item, but it does come off the health care issue. And people should know this. New York State is now one of the few states that has basically banned the practice of what's called surprise medical billing. And that's when you go to the doctor or you go to the emergency room, you believe the doctor's in network, you believe the hospital's in network, but it turns out the anesthesiologist is not, or you go in emergency room and you run to the emergency room, you don't think, I want to go to the emergency room where the that's an in-network, you know, hospital. You
don't think
they have to think about that. And I've met people who have had $100,000 bills from getting caught up in this sort of crazy system where they didn't know that they were in network or they were told the wrong thing. $100,000. A woman I was talking to, a concert pianist, she was contemplating divorce because she was afraid that her family's finances would go down the toilet because of the $101,000 bill that she was facing from a doctor who told her he was in network. Turned out was not, that the plan had him listed as an in-network doctor, but he was not, and so they didn't want to pay it. And so she was facing $101,000. Now that's going to be banned under certain circumstances, certainly emergency rooms, and they're going to have to tell you if any out-of-network doctors are going to be involved in any of the procedures going forward. So that's really good news for patients. That's the kind of thing. A lot of stuff in the budget is stuff
so
that
what
people,
does the patient say? I don't want it because he's out-of-network?
Excuse me?
So what does the patient say when, you know, the, patient's hand falls off? Now they have to reattach.
Well, if it's an emergency setting, you're off the hook. On any emergency setting, it doesn't matter what happens to you. You're in the emergency room. You don't have to, from the gurney, as they're wheeling you in, you don't have to say, by the way, is this an in-network emergency room doctor? You don't have to worry about that. That's done. That's not going to happen. If you have time and you're planning a procedure, and you will be entitled, you will receive a listing of all the participating providers, whether or not they're in network, and if they're not, what would be your financial risk. You're going to get all that stuff up front, and if so, you can say, well, I don't want to have that anesthesiologist who's out of network. I want to have an in-network one so that you're only on the hook for a smaller financial hit.
Let's go to Chris in Albany. Chris in Albany, you're on.
Hello. Hey, I would say a lot less knowledgeable about the budgets and things than I wish I was, but I had heard that in the state budget that there wasn't additional money to pay for the SUNY system, that the state wasn't meeting its obligations in terms of supporting the education system at the college level, and that it wasn't meeting obligations at the K through 12 level in terms of fully funding each student in the public schools and instead transferring a whole lot of money to charter schools. So that's what I've heard, but I wondered, is it true?
Well, first of all, let's go to Blair, who is working, of course, for NYPIRG, the New York Public Interest Research Group, which has a lot of students in the SUNY system. So I know he keeps an eye on this, Blair.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the higher education stuff, I mean, the governor proposed cuts to SUNY and the City University system in his budget. Some of those cuts were restored, though not all. The enhanced money that
restored,
went
restored, you mean by the legislature?
By the legislature.
Yeah.
And the final budget agreement.
Yeah.
But the, where there was some actually additional spending was into the state's financial financial assistance program, known as the Tuition Assistance Program, TAP. So there's more money now in the TAP program to help offer financial assistance for students.
Sounds like sort of a draw now, because we have a lot of people now on the phone, Blair. I wanted to ask you very quickly, what about Chris's other question about education in general?
On K-12, I mean, there's this court case out there where the state is supposed to be spending more money on students than they are, and that problem was not remedied in this budget.
Okay. Hey, Chris, thanks for the
Thank
call.
You.
Appreciate it. All right, let's go to Douglas in Albany. Douglas, you're on. Hey,
yes,
Douglas.
This is a question for Blair. This morning, I happened to start the day in Manhattan. They have two free daily papers in Manhattan, Metro and AM New York.
Yep.
And they pretty much just run like headlines and two paragraphs. One of the little headlines in the Metro, I believe it was, indicated that somehow this budget takes $30 million out of an MTA surplus revenue and allocates it for other use. And, of course, the article wasn't really clear on what all that meant. I was just wondering if Blair had some more details to help us with understanding. And it did. The article did seem to link it to Cuomo's, let's say, victory over de Blasio about de Blasio's now inability to tax the upper income earners to pay for the K through for the pre-K, the universal pre-K.
Okay, here we go.
$30 million might go into that. So.
Douglas, here we go.
Douglas, you're right. The governor initially tried for a $40 million rate of the MTA budgets, their reserve budgets. The legislature agreed to a $30 million raid. And
that's with all the bad things that are happening at the MTA.
Well, and they have to come up with a multi-billion dollar financial plan to deal with all of their the MTA financial requirements, and that plan has to be put together by the end of this calendar year. So when you raid the funds, they have less money. This is the kind of practice that actually led to the decline of the mass transit system in New York City in the 1980s. So it is definitely a big problem. Where the money went, it probably just went into sort of the general fund, and the article may have been linking it to the mayor's the fact that the governor was sort of thumping New York City, and that makes the mayor look bad.
Yeah. Governor to New York City, drop dead. Hey, Douglas, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Cheryl in Yorktown Heights. Cheryl.
Hi. You said nobody was calling, and then I had to wait for a long time.
Well, I'm so No. All of a sudden, all five phones lit up. Now four phones are lit up. I want to keep you appraised as to what's happening, and only because the last guy got off. Douglas got off. Free phone. But you people are wonderful. They really are. Go ahead.
Okay. So this was actually about education, too, and I listened to the woman before in her question. And part of my question is there's so much in the budget, but Cuomo had been going off about how he was going to contain property taxes and do this great thing in New York State that way. Is that reflected somewhere in the budget, since all of our property taxes are basically about schools? I mean, that's And the other thing is, I just don't even understand how they have worked out funding, equitable arrangements between upstate, downstate, if there's been anything different in the budget about that, anything that applies,
That's actually a great question, because in the old days, when the Republicans really were in control, this is Alan now, not Blair, who knows much more than I do, but when the Republicans were really in control of the state Senate, when you guys, giants, walk the land like Warren Anderson and Joe Bruno and people like that, then the governors had to deal with them. But you see, I have a theory, Cheryl, for whatever it's worth, that this governor controls the whole game. The people, the Republicans who are in charge of the state Senate right now, are only there because Andrew Cuomo lets them be there. Because you remember there are four dissident Democrats, we call them collaborationists, who went over to the other side. And the day that the governor shakes, my feeling is the day the governor shakes his finger at Klein from the Bronx and the others and says, get back where you belong, is the day that it's over. So I think he's got, the long and the short of it is, I think he has much more control over the Republican state Senate than in the old days. Blair?
No, just to add a couple things. The caller is right that there were, in the budget, there is some attempt to sort of help reduce property taxes in New York State. We are expecting, I think, this fall, magically right before the election, to get a...
That was sardonic. Did you hear it?
Excuse me?
I was just pointing out to everybody that you were being sarcastic.
Right. Well, it's right, ironic. $350 check, as I understand it, in the budget, there will be... That program will continue, and that will continue to get our $350. There's some efforts to sort of curb property tax increases across the state. The governor has come up with various proposals to try to do that, but it's largely on the margins. I don't expect that. Certainly, the listeners should not expect to see gigantic changes in their property taxes, either for their town taxes, city taxes, county taxes, or school taxes, as a result of the budget agreement.
I don't even think it's possible.
Right, because they're huge. There is some effort in the budget to sort of curb that. And depending on the value of your real estate, you will get a rather small or not nearly as small reduction from the state budget. So the governor tried to do some stuff on that. I think he'll be able to legitimately claim that he was able to help provide some help, but it will come in the form of a check that will magically appear in October.
Cheryl, thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Let's go to Scott. Okay, Scott, go ahead.
Hi. I'm glad to get through. I also wanted to compliment Blair on his commentaries on WAMC. I really enjoy those.
And so do we. We just are so grateful that he's with us. Yeah.
As far as the budget goes, obviously it just came out. It's a huge document formed, again, by three men in a room.
Actually, four now, because they let the other guy, Klein from the Bronx, come in.
So I think, in a lot of ways,
it's
hard to figure out what's in it, and it's going to take a little while for all of that to trickle out unless somebody really had time to sit down and try and read it all.
Let me revise my comments.
There's a lot of people confused.
Let me revise my comments one more time. It's actually four men in the room, because the governor's there, the Democratic leader, Shelley's there, the Republican leader is there, and then you have this guy Klein from the Bronx there. So that's four. But who cares? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I guess my concern is really knowing what's in it and how many of our representatives are really knowing and understanding it, and versus just getting it and having to take somebody's word for what's in there. I wonder what kind of little things are hidden that will crop up later.
Well, it's a very good point. I mean, the budget is largely hammered out in secret. They sort of tipped their hat at having some sort of an open process. There were a few sort of, charade-like public conference committees between the Assembly and the Senate on various aspects of the budget, but no one even pretended that that was anything meaningful. The budget was done behind closed doors.
Didn't the governor say that just because it was behind closed doors didn't mean it wasn't open?
Yeah, I know. Well, that wasn't transparent. I guess maybe the door he was thinking was the glass door.
That was a good joke on us.
It was an early April Fool's joke on us. The budget was largely hammered out in secret. You're absolutely right. It's a very complicated, dense document. There's tons of things in there, little goodies that are probably in there that mean a lot of money to people on Wall Street, for example, that we don't even know about. We only have the broad parameters of what was in the budget agreement, or if somebody was paying close attention to something specific, a specific lawmaker is looking at something specifically, they could find out. The budget documents were written. They were publicly available sometime in the wee hours, at the latest, in the wee hours of Saturday morning.
So what, Scott, you didn't go down there to get your copy?
That's right. Well, you could get it online if you really wanted to, and it was hard to get to, but you could get it if you went to the Senate website. But that being said, the caller's basic point, Scott's basic point, that this stuff is going to be very hard for the public to know what's going on is absolutely true. Then the question is, the lawmakers know what's going on, and they have to basically rely on presentations by the leadership and their staff because it's hard to plow through, thousands of pages of budget documents, even if you do get it 2 days in advance. But they certainly had the opportunity to find out what was in the budget if they wanted to, particularly in areas that they cared about. So, Scott, in the past, there were budgets passed where they were literally being wheeled in and you could feel the heat coming off the pages of documents from the copier. This was not one of those budgets. The budget was large, pretty much available to people that wanted to look at it, and lawmakers, if they wanted to look at it.
Well, the key words are wanted to.
Well, wanted to and had the capacity to read through thousands of pages.
Yeah.
They may not necessarily know everything that's in it, and I'm not sure there are that many people that do, probably the people who wrote the bills and the negotiators themselves.
Good question. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a very short break, 7 seconds or so. So Beth and James and Howard, stay right on the phone. We'll be right with you.
Support for WAMC comes from the Bardavon, presenting the Hudson Valley Philharmonic Mahler's Second Symphony, April 5th, the Johnny Clegg Band, April 6th, and Puccini's La Boheme, April 12th, bardavon.org. The Beechwood Group of Wells Fargo Advisors, LLC, serving not-for-profits and individual investors, Mary McDonald Financial Advisor and Joseph Steiniger CFP Financial Advisor, thebeechwoodgroup.com. The Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, celebrating 30 years of educating children and striving to inspire a lifelong love of learning. WaldorfSaratoga.org. And Spot Coffee, Saratoga Springs, New York, a community-oriented cafe featuring fresh-roasted coffee, baked goods, soup, salad, pizza, and more. SpotCoffee.com.
Okay, we're here. We got a couple of emails. Question, Blair, does the budget do anything to bring the DEC back to a basic level of functionality ever since Pataki trashed it? DEC has been pretty sad, to the great joy of the Chamber of Commerce, says our writer.
Yeah.
Thanks, Alan. I love to hear Blair Horner more often.
It doesn't do enough. I mean, just to give a short answer, the DEC has not been restored to where it was at in the pre-Pataki years. The governor's original proposal didn't do enough for it, and advocates were pushing for more funding in the DEC program. There were some restorations, but it's not where it should be.
By the legislature. And of course, if you're going to have fracking, you won't have anybody to look at the way it's being implemented if it happens.
A big problem with the way that the governor's managed the budget is by squeezing these agencies increasingly can't do the jobs that they're supposed to do and thus can't even do anything new. So if there ever was something like fracking, they would have to come up with a brand new revenue stream to pay for the hiring of a lot of people in order to be able to manage it properly, even if it's possible to manage such a thing properly.
We had a big letter from Dave, but I'm going to take one part of it out, which is state mandates. Is there any reformation of state mandates in the budget?
Not really. The basic argument that people often hear is that property taxes are so high at the local level because the state has mandated that localities do certain things. There was not any meaningful change in that sort of relationship between state and local. You could argue, in fact, that the push for more money for universal pre-K could be argued as an additional mandate, even though money was coming with it. So there was no fundamental change in that relationship.
Okay, great. Let's go to Beth. Okay, Beth, you're on from Niskayuna. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm going to try to tie this into the state budget. Okay, so you discussed the health insurance, and it's good. The hidden costing is good, but it seems a bit of a bone to me. It seems that the big thing to do would be to make sure that, just like auto insurance, I know you only pull that out when you are in an accident or get a flat, something serious. You can't just use it all the time. But why not have New York hospitals, at least, or New York insurance cover you or pay into covering you wherever you go? And part of the way to make sure of that is to salary the doctors, not allow any more sort of a la carte services. I'm just trying to tie it into the budget, that hospitals that get tax money and what hospitals don't, or tax breaks, have to do flat salaries for their doctors and all of that. I've been to private doctors and to clinics. And at the clinics, the main thing they tell me is that that's how they work and that's how they keep their prices down. So,
okay, Beth, because we have a lot of people.
Yep, I understand.
No. Let me ask you very quickly to put it into a single question. Go ahead. Your question is?
How can you tie the budget to making hospitals treat everybody and charging the same price and the same to the insurance companies? Isn't there a way to force the hospitals and the insurance companies to treat and charge everybody the same way, not to say, well, you're from here or you're from there, this is your insurance, we're going to charge you more.
Okay.
That seems to me a state issue.
Okay, Blair.
Well, I mean, you could come up with a very highly regulated healthcare system. In fact, it used to be that way in the 1980s. New York and Maryland had programs where the state basically set the prices. It was regulated, like a utility company, electric utility company. When Pataki became governor, he deregulated that, like he did with utilities. And so now we have this sort of deregulated environment, which is more like the rest of the country. Maryland kept its highly regulated system, and prices have not gone up anywhere nearly as much in Maryland as it has in the rest of the country. Maryland has a pretty well-regarded system. So the state could do more to create a healthcare system that would operate as if it were a utility. They have not done it, so the call, Beth is quite right, you could do something, but it would be a massive change in the relationship between the healthcare industry and the government. And to do that, you're taking on some of the biggest, most powerful sacred cows in the state.
And not only that, who have big sacred cow lobbyists.
Big sacred cow lobbyists, big sacred cow political action committees, independent expenditure campaigns. It's a very big fight. It would be a very big fight. Although I think one that's worth seriously considering, given the enormous costs that healthcare have on the entire system.
Okay, Beth, thank you very much for your call. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Okay, let's go to James. James in Saratoga. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have actually just a very basic question. I have a history of working with the New York City school system years ago, and I at the time realized how much incredible waste there was in the system. I guess my question is, what part of the state budget, if any, goes towards supplementing or supporting the New York City school system, which I believe has like a $12 billion a year budget, I think, with a B?
Well, New York City.
Is there any part of the state tax money that goes towards supporting the New York City school system in any way, shape, or form?
Short answer is yes. Just like all localities, the state provides state support for local school districts, in this case, the city of New York's. The city, like other localities, supplements it through its own income system. In fact, the mayor was talking about adding a tax to those making over $500,000 to pay for a pre-K system for all residents of New York City. So, yes, the state is a big player in the New York City budget, particularly the school budget. The city's budget now, the city budget fight starts to play out now at the city level. Their budget has to be in place by July 1st.
Do you know how much we give?
Not off the top of my head. I mean, the state gives around $20 billion, I believe, is the total education budget. My sense would be that the majority of that goes to the city of New York.
You know, it's interesting. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So that's more than $20 billion. I'm not a math scholar, but that's way more than 10% of the entire. You said 20 million with an M.
No, with a B.
With a B. So that's more than, 15% of the entire state budget?
That's correct. I mean, healthcare is the biggest single category of spending in the state budget. A previous caller talked about it's around roughly $55 billion. School aid is number two.
And James, just for whatever it's worth, a lot of people think that's not enough. A lot of good people think it's not enough.
And that's fine. But is there any way to make it more? I mean, if we're spending that larger percentage of our budget, our entire state budget, on education, especially in one particular school system, the New York City school system, is there any mechanism in which we can demand as a state that the New York City school system become more efficient in the way that they spend the money?
Well, that's the
debate. Or more accountable?
Well, that's the debate. Go ahead.
I mean, the short answer is yes. Some people argue that those are unfunded mandates, actually, to do that. But James is quite right. The state could do, and they do things now to try to deal with waste, fraud, and abuse. But they probably could maybe do more.
But it's a political question, James. No two ways about it. You know, Bloomberg wanted mayoral control. He got mayoral control. People were able to vote for him and say, we like the idea of mayoral control. We don't want local school boards in New York State, New York City, which for...
No, they had a board of education.
Yeah, right. And a board of education. We don't like it. So, yeah, they can put pressure. But, James, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay, let's go to Howard in Great Barrington. Howard, go.
Hi. As a recent returning New Yorker from spending 20 years in Silicon Valley, it seems like innovation seems to drive the economy. So I'm wondering in the New York State budget if there's anything in there to support innovation more than just supporting universities, because most startup companies do not come out of academia.
The short answer to that is I'm not sure. The state does the state, I think, views the particularly the SUNY system as its incubator for the most high-tech, innovative things that it does. There's funding going out to Buffalo, for example, to fund sort of like Albany has its...
Right. And New Paltz has, what do they call those things? Oh, God.
In Albany, they have a nanotechnology.
There's a 3D printing in New Paltz.
That's right. Yeah. They're expanding that to Utica as well in the SUNY system. In Buffalo, they also have a system, sort of a high-tech system for medical innovations. But it's in terms of reacting to Howard's questions, the programs that I know about and that were talked about the most were the systems that were basically running through SUNY as a way to sort of fund the sort of cutting-edge technological advances that I believe that Howard's talking about.
Yeah, I'm just saying most entrepreneurs, having started 8 companies myself, do not go through the school system to start companies. They do it in other ways. Mm. And the reason I spent 20 years in California, it was a much more conducive environment for being an entrepreneur. And as returning to New York, I find this is still the case 20 years later, much tougher for people to think entrepreneurially in New York than it is in California. And I'm just wondering if this would be a good task for the state to take
Howard, you should also take a look at some of the other things the governor has in his budget. There's something called Startup New York, where they're using tax breaks to try to help, I guess, entrepreneurial companies to get started at SUNY campuses again, and CUNY, City University of New York campuses again, where they get free, basically tax-free for 10 years to start up their companies in those areas. So, again, this is not necessarily an area that I have been that focused on. There may be other innovative things that are going on in the budget, but the things that I know about that we're talking the most about are really aligned with the state university and city university systems.
Howard, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's go to Jeff in Monticello. Okay, Jeff, you're on.
Hi. Blair, first of all, I want to thank you for your career in public interest. I mean, there's no higher calling as far as I'm concerned. And then secondly, I would like to know what you know about the implications of the budget for early intervention services in New York.
I think the primary new, by the way, it's very nice. Thank you, Jeff. Maybe when I, as I got closer to getting older, I may think to myself, this may have been such a great calling because my retirement will be a toe tag.
Hey, I hear you.
But in terms of intervention funding, there's definitely funding in the budget. I didn't recall hearing anything different than what the state had been doing in the past. The major thing really was around the funding for universal pre-kindergarten programs. Those, I believe, have been broadened beyond sort of the traditional students to encompass all four-year-olds. And the localities, I believe, in upstate have some latitude in terms of which programs they want to fund with the $40 million. In New York City, the $300 million that they talked about for universal pre-K is supposed to be used for pre-K itself. But in terms of early interventions, I didn't hear of anything dramatically different than what the state had been doing other than what I just described.
Okay, well, thank you. I'm not sure whether you're aware or not that the governor changed the financial reimbursement mechanism for early intervention providers as of April, and it is much, much more difficult for small early intervention providers to get reimbursed for their services. And what he has done is basically greatly reduce the number of early intervention providers in rural areas of New York State, because now each early intervention agency, which typically is, you know, 5, 6, 7 people banding together, need to basically bill like a medical group practice, all the insurance companies, when prior to this, the counties had been fulfilling this role.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate that information.
Always and good disturbing.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's go to Sherry. Okay, Sherry, we can take one or two more calls, and that's hard when you don't have anybody on the air, on the line. 1-800-348-2551. We're almost done, but go ahead, Sherry.
Hi. Well, here's my observation is that so far this call has been, or these calls have been focused on spending. It is my understanding that New York is one of the most indebted states in the nation, arguably second only to California. What with accruing interest, that's becoming a black hole. What plans are there to pay off debt?
I don't believe that there is anything new in the budget that deals with the state's debt load. Not surprisingly, the Sherry's quite right. Not surprisingly, in a state that includes Wall Street, debt becomes one of the primary vehicles for the state to pay for a lot of its programs, appropriately and to some extent, in some cases, inappropriately. Sherry's quite right that New York State has the highest, if not the highest, one of the highest debt loads of any state in the country. And if you throw in all the authorities that the state has, the public, these quasi-governmental entities, public authorities, the state debt load is quite large. As I understand it, the state's credit rating is reasonably good. So that must mean that the Wall Street folks that evaluate the state's capacity to pay off its debts and its debts believe that it's manageable. But I don't know if I did not hear of anything in the now completed state budget that is dealing with the state's debts any differently than they had in the past.
Sherry, go ahead.
How does one interpret a capacity to pay it off when it's not being paid off?
Well, again, it's like...
It means you could if you would. You could if you wanted to.
Well, that they have the capacity to do it. And I believe that, again, these debts are sort of like a mortgage, right? I mean, you take out money,
right.
By and large, when they do this, they're doing it for capital expenditures. They're going to, build a new subway line across the city of New York,
a
for
new
example,
bridge.
Or a new bridge, like they're doing in the Tappan Zee.
Right.
Usually there's bonds that are floated to do that. The state then puts it out to bid. Bidders, investors decide to purchase the bonds. They get paid back at a certain rate. And I assume that the Wall Street folks believe that the state's capacity to pay back the bonds that they put out is within the range of what they should be able to handle. But I agree with Sherry that it is definitely a real policy issue, and it's a policy issue we didn't hear much about in the last budget.
Indeed. Sherry, you make a point. Thank you. Let's go to, let's go to Lee in Ulster. Lee, you got to make it fast.
Mr. Horner, if you have a pet peeve, is there one thing in this process, considering all the topics that have been covered, that you would change if you had an opportunity?
Well, one is hard. The one thing that I think the state really could use is what you see in the city of New York's budget process, for example, clear guidelines that the budget has to be balanced, clear guidelines on how the books are held so that the public can review them, and the creation of an independent budget office to monitor the spending so that the public knows what's going on. The biggest problem in the state budget process is the people who pay the bills, the public, know very little, next to nothing, about what's happening when these decisions are being made. And I think that's a big problem.
Lee, thank you very much. Okay, everybody, we're just about out of time. Blair, as always, I want to join everybody who's called in with good words about you to thank you for the service that you've given all of us. You know, when you can be sure there are all of these lobbyists and fat cats and everybody else, it's great to know that you're there keeping, as you say here on the air a lot, keeping an eye on Albany. But we are out of time, and I want to thank Blair again. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Capital Power Albany, New York, dealer and installer of Kohler Standby Generator Systems, CapitalStandbyPower.com. The Pioneer Valley Jewish Film Festival, presenting 20 films in 9 towns now through April 6th. ValleyJewish.org for schedule. And the Hunt Peach and Castenson Dental, providing general and implant dentistry to Pioneer Valley families for 30 years. In the heart of Amherst on Amity Street, Hunt and Peach. voxpopdental.com. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop, everybody. Remember, the conversation continues online at wamc.org/voxpop. Our engineer has been the incomparable Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Dylan Buckley, who did a terrific job. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.